Well, hello, welcome along to church this morning, or church online if you're watching from home. Welcome to you as well. My name's Brendan McLaughlin and I'm one of the ministers here at Erwood Anglican. And one of the things I like to do from time to time is I watch reaction videos on YouTube. Now, a reaction video is when you film someone watching another YouTube video and you see their reaction to that video. And I saw a reaction video a little while back of two African Americans watching a Tim Minchin song that he calls Prejudice. Now, Tim Minchin is about as white as you can get. He's a redhead who lives here in Sydney, and he's got this song called Prejudice. And Prejudice is about a word, a particular word, with, quote, a horrible history of being used to abuse, suppress, and subdue. He says, six seemingly harmless letters. A couple of G's, an R and an E, an I and an N. And you can see these two African Americans, when he calls out those letters, they start to say, oh no, he isn't. White guys can't use that word. And you can see them getting a little bit agitated as they're waiting for this white guy to drop the N word. Well, the chorus comes around and Minchin says, only a ginger can call another ginger a ginger. That was his word of prejudice. And you see the African-Americans, they relax a bit and they have a bit of a laugh. And they're right to laugh because Tim Minchin has, in a very funny and very clever way, outlined the seriousness of racism. Now, forgive me for changing tone so abruptly here, but racism is serious. The research is in on this. See, when people are exposed to long-term racism, not only does it start to affect their mental health in really serious ways, it actually can start to take away their hope. It doesn't just lead people to feel inferior, they start to question whether society wants them at all. And if left unchecked, it has all too often led many people to commit suicide. And what this means is, not only is racism inherently stupid, right, that it bases a person's contribution to society on something as superficial as the colour of their skin, all right, it is also fundamentally evil. It leads to things like trauma, hopelessness and suicide in individuals, alongside tribalism and social disorder in communities. And today, we're going to look at what God has to say on this topic, which I have to tell you is way more than can be squeezed into one sermon. I thought about cramming three sermons into today's talk, but that would end up being helpful to no one. So unfortunately, we can only begin our journey today into looking at what God has to say about racism. And I've got 3 points, as your sermon outline shows, to help explain the basics, just the basics of what the Bible has to say on the topic of racism. So we're going to begin by defining racism and looking at what kind of things it includes. So I've titled our first point, What Does Racism Look Like? But if we're going to have any hope of addressing this scourge on society, we need to dig down deeper and find what lies behind racism. So I've titled our second point, Where Does Racism Come From? We're then going to conclude by looking at how you and I can be part of the solution as opposed to part of the problem, and that is by understanding how God has already worked to start healing racism. And so I've titled our third point, How to Combat Racism. Now, while we're only whetting our appetites today, what I should say is that our passage cuts right to the heart of this problem and how to combat it. So let's dive in and have a look at what does racism look like, where does racism come from, and how to combat racism. And like I said, it's wise to begin with a definition of racism. Most dictionaries define racism in a pretty similar way, so the best I saw was this, all right, racism is prejudice, discrimination or antagonism directed at a person or people because of their colour, ethnicity or national origin. All right, I'll say that again, prejudice, discrimination or outright antagonism directed at a people or person based on their colour, their ethnicity or their national origin. Or to put it more simply, racism is racial superiority. Right? It's the belief that race determines our intellectual, cultural, or moral capacities. Right? It is the mistaken belief that other races are just more stupid, more primitive, or more immoral than my race. And look, here are some real-life examples I've heard personally. These are the ones I've actually heard, all right? People from that particular ethnic background, they all marry their cousins, and that kind of inbreeding leads to less intelligence. I've heard people say that. The reason that particular race is so poor is because they're all too lazy to get off their backsides and do an honest day's work. People from that particular race are all greedy. Or people from that particular race, they care more about saving face than dealing with the truth. Now notice what each of these examples are doing. They're taking a particular characteristic that they may have seen in one or two people, and they're then turning it into a generalization for the entire race. They're in effect writing that race off as inferior. And friends, I have spoken to many of you who have experienced that kind of thing in your life. It is devastatingly hard. But racism actually runs much deeper than just these kind of mistaken beliefs. Because when we make assessments of people groups, right, ethnic groups, racial groups, it actually goes on to affect society at large. It affects things like the political system, the economic system, the criminal system, and the educational system. And when that happens, racism can actually become institutionalized. Now, we need to be really careful with the phrase institutionalized racism, because it's actually illegal in this country for an institution or a company to discriminate against persons on the base of race. Now, that's not to say that it doesn't still happen. I was told this week that there are videos on the internet of Indigenous people walking into real estate agents to be told that there are no vacancies available for rent. They will then send a white person in to that same real estate agent, and they will be given a list of vacant rental properties. Now, that's illegal in this country, but they're isolated instances. That's not actually what I'm talking about when I talk about institutionalized racism. What I mean by institutionalized racism is it's when a system marginalizes people on the basis of race, even though most of the individuals in that system are not intentionally trying to do so. I'll give an example of what I mean. There's a video on YouTube. If you want to look it up, I suggest you do. It's called Black Parents Explain How to Deal with the Police. Right? If you want to look it up, YouTube, Black Parents Explain How to Deal with the Police. And in this heartbreaking video, African-American parents tell their kids how they should deal with the police. And these are the kinds of things they say. They say, don't ever talk back to the police. Don't ever reach for your license without first telling the officer you're reaching for your license. Always keep your hands where the police officer can see them, and, quote, do whatever you have to do to get back to me. Now, white parents don't have to have those conversations. But here's the thing. White Americans don't want Black Americans to have to deal with that. The law and order system in America was not set up specifically to make that happen. But somehow, African Americans have been marginalized in that system. And because they've been marginalized, you and I all know the name George Floyd, don't we? Institutionalized racism is a system that marginalizes people on the basis of race, even though most of the individuals in that system are not intentionally trying to do so. So, look, that's a quick overview of what racism looks like. On the surface, it is prejudice or discrimination, whether intentional or not, directed against a people or person based on their colour, ethnicity, or national origin. Now, friends, we have been trying to combat this for decades now, through movements, protests, through slogans, and we have had some success. I've got to be honest with you. We need to be honest about this. You go and watch movies like Remember the Titans or The Butler, and you'll see how far the civil rights movement has actually brought the US since the 1950s and 60s. We've made progress. It's the same in this country. It was actually strong activism that led to the 1967 Australian referendum that finally granted Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islanders Australian citizenship. But if we're ever going to make real headway on this problem, we have to understand the source of racism. Right? While band-aids help, unless we find the source of a problem, we can't properly treat it, can we? And our passage today very helpfully helps us see the source of racism. So it's Ephesians chapter 2, verses 11 to 22, and it's addressing the racial divide between Jews and Gentiles. Now, most people know what Jews are. They're people from Israel. Gentiles are pretty much everyone else. Okay? And there was a big racial divide between the Jews and everyone else back in the first century. We actually see it in verse 14. If you've got your Bibles open there or your phones open there, it says this: "For he, Jesus, himself is our peace, who has made the two one and destroyed the barrier, the dividing wall of hostility." There was a dividing wall of hostility between Jews and Gentiles. And what was that dividing wall of hostility? We actually see it in verse 15. It is the law with its commands and regulations. The law with its commands and regulations. You see, God gave the nation of Israel a big list of laws, including the Ten Commandments, to show them how he wanted them to live, the best way to live. And Israel was then to show the nations how awesome God's laws are and call the nations into a relationship with God as well. They were to be a light for the Gentiles. Instead, the Jews came to despise the Gentiles because they were immoral and unclean. They weren't following God's laws. And in turn, the Gentiles grew to despise the Jews because the Jews were looking down on them. And friends, this is how racism works. Humans take a gift or a characteristic that they have that is good, and they elevate it to absolute value so that they can then look down on anyone else who doesn't have that gift or characteristic. And the reason humans do this is because we like to be made much of, don't we? I mean, who doesn't like to feel that they're special? But there's actually a really good reason why humans like to be made much of. And that is, we were actually designed that way. Let me explain. When God made Adam and Eve, he gave them a paradise where they had anything they ever wanted or needed. Now imagine that for a second. Imagine the richest man in the world, Jeff Bezos, comes to you and he says, "I want to use all the resources at my disposal to build you a paradise where you will have everything you ever wanted or needed. But it gets even better." He says, "Because you are so special to me, I actually want to come and hang out with you each and every day in that paradise, because I just delight in hanging out with you." Now, how would you feel if he did that for you? You'd feel like royalty, wouldn't you? And that's what God did with humans. He didn't need to create us, but he did to show his glory. And in particular, he shows his glory through his love and his generosity. And so the reason humans love to be made much of is because God designed us to be made much of. It's just that God wanted to be the one who made much of us. Right? That's part of how he shows his glory, by showing his love to make much of us. The problem is that all changed in Genesis chapter 3, where Adam and Eve rebelled against the one rule God gave them: don't eat the forbidden fruit. And that rebellion resulted in God having to withdraw from humans. Now, why did he have to withdraw from humans? Because perfect righteousness cannot coexist with evil and sin. Right? Just like paper cannot come into contact with fire without being burned up, sin cannot come into contact with perfect righteousness without being burned up. And God didn't want to, because God didn't want to burn us up on the spot, he couldn't hang out with Adam and Eve in the garden anymore. And because he couldn't hang out with Adam and Eve in the garden anymore, he couldn't make much of them the way he used to. So what do we do to fulfill that inbuilt desire to be made much of? Well, we look for it in other ways, don't we? We take those distinctives that are good, those characteristics that are noble, and we elevate them to absolute value so that we can then look down on others who don't have those good and noble characteristics and gifts. We claim that my gifts, my characteristics make me superior to you. And this is where racism comes from. It's from people wanting to be made much of through falsely claiming that they are superior or their race is superior. Now this leaves us with one big question. How do we combat this scourge? I don't know about you, but now that we've gone to the very source of racism, I'm starting to see why protests and rallies and slogans haven't actually worked. All right, let me recap the problem for us. We were designed to want to be made much of. Why? Because God wanted to be the person who made much of us, to hang out with us in the paradise he'd built for us. But God couldn't do that once sin entered the world. He had to withdraw from us so as to not burn us up on the spot. The big question is, how do humans feed our inbuilt need to be made much of without elevating ourselves above others, particularly other races? Well, friends, this is where I'd like to submit that only the Christian gospel has the combat strategy that is workable. Now, the Christian gospel is the Christian message, okay? If you're one of those people who comes to church and says, I wish they would just tell me what Christians believe, or you've come to the right place, right? The Christian message is very simple. Number one, God gave humans a paradise to live in and hang out with him. Number two, humans stuffed it all up when they ate the forbidden fruit. Number three, God now has to distance himself from humans so as to not burn them up with his perfect righteousness. But number four, God still wants to hang out with us. And so what he did was he sent his son Jesus to be burned up in our place. That's what the cross is. All right, have a look at verse 16. And in one body to reconcile both of them to God through the cross. Through the cross. The cross is Jesus swapping places with humanity. All right, it is Jesus coming into the presence of God, clothed in our sin, so that he is burnt up. But at the same time, Jesus clothes his people with his righteousness so that when we finally meet our Maker, we are not burned up. Right? If I can push our Jeff Bezos story from a little further, it's like Jeff Bezos coming to you and saying, look, you trashed the first paradise I made for you. And so what I'm going to do instead is I'm going to use all my resources. Right, $175 billion, according to Google this week. I'm going to use all my resources to build you a new paradise so that we can hang out. Now, the only problem with that illustration is you cannot actually put a price on God's only beloved Son. Yet that is what it cost God to reconcile us back into his presence. Now, friends, if you don't currently believe in the Christian God, don't you desperately wish he were true? Don't you desperately wish there were someone out there who said, "You are so important to me that I will give up my only beloved son in order to hang out with you." If you do believe in that God, how does the gospel make you feel? Does it not astonish you, captivate you, electrify you, knowing how much God makes of you? And this is why the gospel is the only way to combat racism. Right? Firstly, the gospel says, in order to save you from your sins, God had to pay an infinite price. The death of his only beloved son. But here's the thing. He has to do the same for you that he has to do for every other race. We actually see it in verse 17. Have a look at verse 17. He came and preached peace to you who were far away, that is the Gentiles, and peace to you who were near, that is the Jews. Every single race needs the same payment for their sin. What that means is the gospel takes away all superiority, whether it be academic, economic, moral, or racial superiority. Right? That's the first thing the gospel does. The second thing the gospel does is it outshines any of the good gifts or noble characteristics we might be tempted to elevate above others. Right? Sure, it's nice to be an Aussie. It's nice to have a good job. It's nice to be a Dragon supporter, though not this year. But friends, all those things pale into insignificance compared to a God, a creator, who loved you so much that he gave his son for you, loves you so much that he pardons you, loves you so much that he delights in you as a perfect and righteous child of God. Right? The gospel combats racism because it shows how superficial race actually is compared to a God who makes much of you. The only thing left to do now is to put this combat plan into action. Let me close with four quick ways the gospel helps us directly combat racism. Number one, what we can do is we can check our heart. We need to check our heart. All right? As our regulars will know, becoming a Christian doesn't make us perfect. It just makes us forgiven. Christians are still tempted to be made much of outside of God. Right? We need to check that we don't have blind spots when it comes to racism. That's the first thing we can do. Second thing, preach the gospel to yourself regularly to protect against racism. Right? Remind yourselves of those two things. Number one, we are just as sinful as they are. Verse 18, have a look. For through him, we both have access to the Father. We need Jesus just as much as every other race. But here's the second thing. You are just as loved and accepted as they are. Verse 18, for through him we both have access to the Father. Number three, we need to understand that there are systems that marginalise people groups in this world, even though the people in those systems are not intentionally trying to marginalise those people groups. I've written about it on the news sheet if you want to read that a little later on. But in this country, Indigenous people make up 28% of the adult prison population, even though they make up only 3.3% of the general population. Now, in one sense, we can say, well, the people who are in jail are the people who commit the crimes. Or we can recognise that the system you and I enjoy, that system being modern Australia, has unintentionally resulted in a frightening percentage of incarcerated Indigenous people. And number four, when we see marginalised groups, support their fight for equality. All right, lend your time to find out more. Lend your voice to theirs. Lend your money. Offer training or employment opportunities to the marginalised if you can. What can we do? Think about that. But friends, understand, racism is real and racism is evil. As Christians, we have the only thing that can actually combat this evil. That is the God who has made much of us.